Hi, it's Steven to Good Sport Law. Leave me a message. I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Hey, Steve. It's Dina. You aren't going to believe what just came across my desk. We need to chat. Give me a call.
Welcome to the latest episode of Sportopia. We're so excited to share our knowledge and have conversations about healthy human sport. We're very excited to have a special guest with us today. Shauna Buchel is the president and CEO of Inclusion in Canadian Sport Network, or ICSN. You know us sport people, we just love another acronym. So Shauna, fantastic. We've added a really important one to the alphabet soup that is Canadian sport. ICSN is an organization that is deeply committed to the empowerment of Black, Indigenous, and people of color within the Canadian amateur sports community. Their mission revolves around three core objectives: celebration, advocacy through allyship, and networking. I'll invite Shauna to speak more about her work in a moment, but before we do, Steve, what's coming across your desk this week?
I'm excited to talk about this, Dina. Usually, I get to talk about reactive things that sometimes aren't the funnest of topics. But today, after our recording today, I'll be working on something proactive. So I've been able to support an organization in their board recruitment, and they've had several applicants for a few spots. And I actually get to spend a half an hour with each candidate interviewing them and seeing if their values and their skill sets and expertise align with the needs of the organization. So really, I'm really happy to be doing that kind of work, to be proactive and try and find a couple good people for this organization. Funny enough, this is only step one. This is just an initial interview to see if their values and personality and again, experience fit within the organization. And then that's part one. Part two is a formal board interview with some of the nominations committee. So really like seeing the due diligence this organization is doing to ensure they find people on their board that fit their needs. And yeah, so it's extremely exciting to be involved in that proactive type of work. And I know the amount of time organizations put into, I'll say, dealing with and sometimes managing board members can be challenging. And hopefully this will minimize that moving forward if somebody's not there with aligned values of the organization. So what's new with you, Dina? What's happening?
Well, in this moment, I'm just noticing that my friend Steve looks relieved and you're smiling, almost giggling, because you're doing some proactive work. And I also really appreciate that the first thing that came out of your mouth was, I'm going to check for values. You know, 15 years ago, that wouldn't have been like in the first checklist of the lawyer who was, you know, checking resumes and other things. But it's amazing, Steve, as we've evolved our practice, right, where we've started to actually learn from each other, you know, as well. So there you go.
I don't have a comment to that. I'm just going to ignore that comment.
Spoken like a true lawyer. Next. So what's coming across my desk? Well, there's a interrelated things. We've been asked to submit a response to a request for a proposal, and it's taken the better part of 10 days for quite a few of us at Sport Law to marshal our energy. And what I'm noticing is how much fun it's been to work alongside, you know, three other team members to pull this RFP together in support of a really, really interesting and novel and exciting project. And so, you know, even if we don't get it, I really experienced a lot of joy, gratitude, and pride in noticing how much depth of knowledge the team members at Sport Law have, and especially when we kind of combine our zones of genius. So that was really exciting. And then alongside that, I've been asked more frequently to be a thinking partner with a couple of clients who just want some support in working through some different projects and then kind of mapping it out. It's quite easy for me to, you know, put things on paper, as you know, Steve. So it's been really, I'd say it's been good work, hard work in a way to conceptualize all these things and find the right language, but also very meaningful work. So that's what's coming across my desk. And now we're going to learn more from our dear friend Shauna. You know, in addition, Shauna, to all this new exciting role that you have, and I cannot think of a better person to champion what I like to call cultures of belonging. You were also the manager of EDI and student experience for the Ontario University Association, and then previously held the role of ED with Field Hockey Ontario. So you have this vast experience, but beyond your brilliant mind, you have such a compassionate heart. And so we're just delighted to have you join us today. And so what's coming across your desk?
So right now, actually, I am wrapping up the Diversity in Sport Conference. We just held the second annual Diversity in Sport Conference this past weekend in Mississauga. Had over 260 people from across Canada in attendance, including emerging BIPOC leaders, which is something that's near and dear to my heart. If anything, the conference I enjoy is having a room full of emerging BIPOC leaders, because for me, I never had that when I was their age. Like, I've never been in a room full of other people that looked like me, that wanted to work in sports, that had similarities to me. And just to see the energy, to see their excitement, and to know that, you know what, we're actually going to be in a good place in a couple of years with the next generation of leaders coming up, just feels amazing. But to also see colleagues coming in from Nova Scotia, PEI, Saskatchewan, and for all of them to say, this is amazing, I've learned something new, I'm taking stuff back to my club or my province and encouraging other people to come. Like, that's what it was all about for us, because like, our hashtag is stronger together. And I keep saying that because we can't do it alone. We can't work alone. So the fact that we are able to bring in so many people from across Canada to sit with us for 3 days to basically have those uncomfortable conversations, because before we can become comfortable, we have to become uncomfortable. And that was a vulnerable moment for some people to sit in those rooms and have those conversations and to see how they can do more to be great allies or supporters for their colleagues or their future colleagues or their athletes and the people in their communities. So that is definitely still trying to unwind from that, but the posts keep coming, everything keeps coming. So very, very grateful that we got to host number two. And now the fun part of planning number three is on the way.
I love that. I really appreciate the reminder that there must be truth before reconciliation. So thank you for reminding us of that.
We get asked all the time, like, can this conference be virtual? Can we not have an online component for it? And I say no, because for me, it's like some of these, because people are becoming so vulnerable and people are, you know, sharing something very personal, we don't know who's online. You don't know if they've walked away from their computer or if they're really engaged or they're multitasking. And we just really want people to be in the room, because it's a different feeling being in that room than just watching it on a screen or like listening to it later on. And we want people, as I said, it's like, you know, a lot of people of color are feel uncomfortable or they don't feel like they can speak up. And I actually had a sport administrator say, I now understand what my colleague goes through on a day-to-day basis. And that was the power of being in that room, because it was a, she said, I felt uncomfortable, but now I understand how other people feel when they can't come to us. So it was, do I see it going online? Not anytime soon. We might do recaps and things online, but we want you to be uncomfortable before you can become comfortable in this situation.
Yeah, I so appreciate this, Shauna. You know, as a white privileged woman in her 55, you know, 55th year, and I do a lot of soul searching. I've been immersed in social justice courses, especially as it relates to death and loss. And so if we're going to provide grief-informed care to all people, we must practice beyond cultural competence. We actually must practice and be humble. And so that capacity to be humble, to be in the unknown, to invite the discomfort that is mine to hold, by the way, right? And so that as an ally, I can never truly understand what your lived experience is as a woman of color. And yet I can bear witness. I can do my part to support. And that means I have to do the work. I have to educate myself and become informed, become sensitized, become competent, and then kind of let go of all of that and be willing to receive other when we're in these spaces where that disruption is actually forging intimacy, forging the cultures of belonging that you spoke to. So excited. And I hope to maybe join. If you let me know when the conference is next year, I would love to participate.
Yeah. Next year's conference is our theme is Stronger Together. And when I started in this work, especially when I'm going back to my days and working in the OUA, there was nobody else in Canada that was doing my job. So I reached out global. Like I just like Googled EDI in sports and, you know, Australia popped up, New Zealand, UK, the United States. And I reached out to them and they all welcomed me with open arms. They shared resources, they shared templates, they shared best practices. And next year's conference, they're all coming to Canada to share their best practices, to share their resources, and to also help run workshops because we're all in this together. Nobody in this world is perfect when it comes to EDI, and we could all learn from each other when it comes to this. So I'm super excited. It is happening May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of next year, same location in Mississauga, Ontario. And we've actually already had people trying to buy tickets for next year. And I'm like, let us get through this year first. And we're going to open up tickets in January of 2025.
All right. Wow. I've just written it down, putting it in my book. So Shauna, it's actually a beautiful segue because what I think we want to maybe dive into is your role. Maybe it's our role, right? Steve's role, my role, your role as mentors and femtors. And yes, everyone, that is not a typo. If we can mentor others, we can femtor others. We've written a blog on that, so you can go check that out. But what impact has it had on you for you to step more fully into your full zone of genius on behalf of yourself and then all these younger emerging femtors and mentors and mentees and femtees?
Well, I never saw myself as a mentor, to be very honest. Like when I look back at it, I was that one where I just kept to myself. And it was when I was working at Field Hockey Ontario, I had a young lady who was at the time, I think in her first or second year of university, send me a note on Instagram. And she just said, seeing you in your position has given me hope. And I didn't realize until that time, the impact of me being in my position and what it was doing for other people. And I reached out to her to say, thank you so much. And when we connected, she gave me some more stats at the time. I didn't realize what it was. And she was like, you're the only Black female in Ontario in an executive director role. And at first I didn't believe her. I was like, there's no way I could be the only one. And I decided to go through every single PSO in Ontario. And then I went through every single PSO for every other province. And I came back to say, holy, fill in the blanks on that one. And I'm like, I am the only one, like only Black female. And there was a handful of couple Black males. And I was like, how is that possible? And we're in 2020, 2021. And how am I one of not even 10 people of color in an executive director role? So it was at that time where I'm like, okay, so maybe me just staying in the shadows and staying in the back isn't going to benefit a lot of people. And I started putting myself out there to be a mentor. And over the last couple of years, a lot of my amazing mentees that I've had, I continue just to share my experience and share my path. And I understand where they're going or understand what they've been through, especially being a woman of color in an environment where there's not that many women of color working, and just being able to say to them, it's like, you know, here are some paths, or here are some organizations, or here are some other resources that you maybe didn't know existed. But then it's also when their things aren't going right, it's reminding them there's two sides to every story. So yes, we want to see things being done a certain way. I'm not saying we have to alter or change our whole programming, but we need to find like a happy medium that we can make sure that we're we're still being great partners, we're still being great allies, and we're not just coming across as, well, you're trying to change us, you're trying to do this. And I gave them the examples with the diversity in sport conference. Originally, I just wanted it for sport administrators and for BIPOC leaders. And I was like, told, is like, well, no, can you please also open it up to coaches and officials? And I was like, well, why would I want to do that? They have, like, you know, the coaching association, they have their officials association. We didn't really have anything for administrators. But when for 2 years now, watching coaches and officials come to the conference, they appreciate being connected. They appreciate knowing these things as well. And at first you don't see that big picture, but then that big picture does show at the end. And it's like just reminding everybody to kind of take a step back once in a while and then move forward. And it's happy to see my mentees growing and running their own organizations and pursuing opening more doors. One of the phrases used this past weekend by Aaliyah Atkinson, she ran a workshop with the emerging leaders, first Black woman to be crowned a world champion in swimming. And she was like, always remember to bring the elevator back down, to send the elevator back down for the next generation. So literally, we're sending the elevator back down to make way for the next group coming in. And that was something that hit home a lot. And I didn't realize that's what we were doing. That's what I was doing. And it took that one note on Instagram to help me realize there are people looking at me, even though I thought nobody was looking at me from that end.
That's thank you for sharing that, Shauna. That's really cool to see your journey through sport and how you're able to give back. I want to dive down a little bit more on the network. And what else are you doing? What else is the mission and vision and values of the organization and some of the programs that you're trying to implement right now?
Well, a lot of people don't know ICSN was formerly known as the Black Canadian Coaches Association, so BCCA. BCCA started a mentorship program for coaches, and we're still continuing that mentorship program, but not just for coaches. We've opened it up for officials, sport medicine, sport journalism, like people of color who are looking to break into sport. And we were very fortunate to receive the Sport Canada, and I'm going to butcher it, it's the Gender Equity and EDI funding. I think that's what it was. It was a very long, long name with that funding. And part of that funding is to continue to help with the mentorship programs. It's to continue to help with breaking down those barriers. And we've added a breaking our sports leadership program. So breaking barriers in sport, where we are helping BIPOCs, not just in the sports that they typically play, but working with sports that you see a lack of BIPOCs in. So this year we're actually partnered or working with swimming, and we're in 5 regions across the country in helping provide free swim lessons for BIPOCs under the age of 12. We have municipalities coming to us all the time saying, well, we would love to have more BIPOC lifeguards and coaches and swim instructors. And I was like, well, before you can get to that, they got to learn how to swim. So it's like, it's going from before you can run, you got to learn how to walk. Before you can walk, you got to learn how to crawl. Before you can get BIPOC lifeguards and swim instructors, they got to learn how to swim. So we have to start somewhere to get them going in that retrospect. And we're starting with 12 and under because a lot of refugees and newcomers unfortunately have drowned in the past couple of years at that young age. So we want to make sure we can get them young before they get to the adolescence and get them going. But then for the ones that do have enough, like BIPOCs that are teenagers, we are helping them with their bronze medallion, their bronze cross, their life-saving skills certification. And part of that is, yes, we're helping you get your certification. They volunteer by helping coach the younger kids. So for us, it goes to the see it, be it, achieve it. And it's a full circle moment for us to move in that direction. Also going to start working with Cycling Ontario with opening up more programming for BIPOCs there. Pam's been doing an amazing job at Cycling Ontario, and I'm just happy that she wanted to partner with us to see what we can do and then hopefully spread it across Canada once we've done the pilot with them. And then working with Hockey Canada, and not just, again, opening up programs for playing, but also how can we get more officials, more coaches, more minor officials and volunteers in the hockey programs. And we're starting off with Hockey Nova Scotia. and doing some pilot projects with them out there. And then our goal is to hopefully continue to spread it to the other provinces next year. We're also launching in the fall the Anti-Racism in Sport Toolkit. It's a very long name right now. We're rebranding it. And part of the toolkit will actually, it's all the templates, all the resources, everything that will be in there will follow the LT80 model. So it's not going to say, oh, here's something, just tailor it to fit you. It's like, no, if your fundamentals, if you're at this stage, here's the proper material for you for your age groups. And that's something we've worked on. And the one thing I'm super proud about this toolkit and the group that came together, it is BIPOCs who work in sport across Canada coming together to put this toolkit together for the community, and also working with amazing community program partners to make it happen. And a lot of our program partners have that lived experience in amateur sport and understand the difference between amateur sport and the LTAD stages. And then, of course, our next one is just continuing with the Diversity in Sports Conference. Like, it's working on year three. So we have multiple different programs where the toolkit will then have the workshops at the Diversity in Sport Conference. So again, it becomes that full circle for everybody. And again, it's not about just saying this is like what you should be doing. We want to be able to work with people and say, here's what, like, you know, here's what we believe are some of the best practices. We're willing to work with you to implement those best practices, and here are the steps to break it down. So really, if people have programs and things that they've been doing, that is great. How can we help enhance what you're doing? How can this maybe add something that you didn't think about? And here's something that you can put forward and go in that direction.
I was worried, Shauna, when I asked you that question, being in the role for such a short period of time, you would only have one or two things to say, but that's quite the impressive list of things that the network's been able to do in a very short period of time. I wonder what your opinion is on, you know, being a policy guy myself, writing, I always like to say writing the policy is the easy part, and the living it or implementing it's the hard part. I wonder if there's any practical tips you could share with our listeners to help support the work you're doing and to make EDII policies come to life.
Whenever I do get asked that question all the time, get to know your community. Like, don't just go in there to say this is what you want to start doing and moving in that direction. Like, genuinely get to know them. Understand how their community is different, understand how things work in that retrospect, and never assume one cultural group is the same as another cultural group. And that's something that people I've noticed when they're like, well, we run this program for the Asian community. I'm like, that may not work in the Caribbean community. You have to understand the groups that you're working with. You have to understand each of them have different struggles. Some people have generational households. Some people also have a certain level of education. So watch the verbiage that you put into your policies as well. I always say use the KISS method. Keep it simple. For so many ends, like, let's not go to the thesaurus dictionary and use one of the most complicated words that people have to look up to understand what it is from that nature. And it's also, people can tell from body languages if you're genuine or not. So if you want to work and guide, it's not going to happen with a snap of the fingers. It's going to take a couple of weeks, months, maybe a couple of years. So be patient. Understand that, like, people have tried a lot of different programs, a lot of different policies. They haven't been successful. So a lot of people have their guards up at this moment in time, and you're going to have to take your time to break those guards down and to gain their trust. And once you can gain their trust, work with them to create policies. Don't just create a policy and say, this is what we're going to do. Work with them, get their feedback, get their consultation. Again, it will take time, but they will respect you a lot more, and they will help, be more than happy to bridge the gap once you're able to do it from that aspect. And as I said, I haven't really seen that yet. A lot of people are just like, we're going to do this, and it backfires on them. And then they wonder why it backfired. I'm like, because you didn't ask for feedback. You didn't ask how to implement this with the communities. And the communities are like, we're not doing that. That's not going to help us. So bring them in from the jump, bring them in from day one, and let them feel included in the process. And again, if it's a snap of the finger solution you're looking for, it's not going to work. Just be ready to take the long haul and give yourself the time to make sure you can do it right the first time.
Yeah, this is so resonating with me. And, you know, Steve's brought us down to a 3 feet off the ground. What are the practical things we can do? And, you know, maybe I'll riff off that a little bit. I really feel there's a underpinning of not about us without us, you know, engage us in the conversation. And what I'm noticing right now, and I've used this kind of analogy, Shauna, see if it feels right for you. We're in liminal space. And liminal means I'm not there and I'm not, you know, there. I'm somewhere in the middle in these brackish waters. And brackish waters are really uncomfortable spaces to be in. I'm not salt water and I'm not fresh water. I'm in this middle where it's murky and really uncomfortable. So part of what's arising in me as I'm listening to you, and I'm fresh off a university course on social justice, right? So I've got all of these principles that are like really alive in me now in a more embedded way as part of the way I show up in the world. And so what I'm noticing is the system, our sport system right now, it's not really a system, you know, it's a podgemodge of interconnected, forced fit experiences and organizations that are trying to do the best they can, but we're never designed to meet the complexities of a 21st century reality. And so the 20th century system that we inherited was deeply, deeply privileged, right? It wasn't for women, it wasn't designed for people of color or people who are neurodivergent or, you know, people who didn't look like the people who designed the system. So why would we expect our sport culture to feel like it is inclusive of me, that I'm welcomed here, that I belong? So part of what I've been advocating for a moment now is rather than try and assimilate and force people of color, indigenous people, you know, trans people, right? Like all of the people that have been othered, why, you know, instead of trying to force fit them into a broken system, what if we could pause as a system, which is what I hope the commission, right, the Future of Sport Commission will really do, is understand the invisible structures that are keeping sport together when actually the current system needs to die, it's on life support, and allow something new to emerge from the ashes, right? Like Phoenix rising from the ashes. My hope is that we don't just have you assimilate into this system, but actually we learn from your rituals and practices and that of indigenous wisdom, indigenous knowledge and ways of being. My sense is that sport will be so much better and we will be better together if we don't just assimilate like the Borgs, but rather allow this to, you know, end, complete, and then create something that is more likely going to reflect your desire for a more equitable and just and socially acceptable and socially fair culture. So any comments on that?
Yeah, it's the one thing, and I always say this, is think outside the box, because everybody in sport has been so used to staying within the sport box for so many years, decades. This is how we've done it. This is the way it's supposed to go. This is the movement we go. Things have changed. Things have drastically changed in our country over the decades. People are like, I always get asked the question, well, where can I find groups or how can I connect with cultural groups or things from that nature? We have immigration offices and organizations. We have cultural groups who have all these newcomers and refugees and groups that would like to work with or like to play sports and be a part of a sport program. Have you as an organization reached out to them in your community? Have you tried going to where they are instead of just saying, well, we sent an email and didn't hear back from somebody? If you're able to jump in the car, jump in an Uber, go walk down the street, if it's in walking distance, go into the office and meet somebody face to face, because they get hundreds of thousands of emails from families every single day looking for help. It's also a lot of organizations, like, for example, there is the Supporting Black Communities Fund that the federal government has that they opened a couple of years ago. And they have different grants and opportunities for funding that comes out, but you have to be a Black-led organization, for example, to apply for the funding. A lot of Black-led organizations in sports do not know how to apply for funding. So as a sport organization, a lot of groups have a grant writer or have somebody that's on their staff that could help work with your community partners to bridge the gap. And that's what I mean, like, think outside the box. Don't just say, oh, I can't apply for that. It doesn't apply to us. We don't fit the bill. But your community groups do. And your community groups can't apply for the funding because they don't know, like, you need to have a strategic plan, or you need to have your mission vision or your board of directors, or here's the proper paperwork. Help set up those lessons or help set up those networking opportunities to bridge those gaps. And that's what I mean when I say, like, we're stronger together. If people are able to take their strengths that they have in other groups and help them, you'll see how it can come back twofold and everybody works together in those directions. It's not working right now. We have more cultural groups creating their own sports league because they do not feel like they are invited into the ones that we have in our current system. And if we keep going at the current rate that we're going, we're going to be so divided in this country that there's probably going to be 10 or 20 different basketball leagues. There's going to be how many different soccer leagues or groups along those ends because people are not working together, or they're just like, nope, this is my lane. I'm sticking in my lane. Instead of take that chance, take that risk, go outside your box, try something new. What's the worst somebody can say? No, they say no, they say no. And that was the advice I was giving years ago. Take that chance, step outside the line and just think different. Think bigger picture, think broader. And this is how we can have a better system. But if people aren't willing to change, if this system doesn't change, we're not going to have a grassroots organization. We're not going to have our PSOs and or our PTSOs and our NSOs aren't going to have a lot of people that are going to be members with them or wanting to play for Team Canada. They're going to get their passports or dual citizenships and go and play for another country. So people have to understand what has worked in the past 20 years is currently not working. And we have to be able to say it's time for change. We realize there's change, and it's only going to change if we all work together.
I love that segue, Sean, into my last question. 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, what does success look like?
Success for me is seeing, to be very honest, more diversity within our Canadian sports system. I've been in this now, working in this system for 20 years, a part of this system from my playing days, from back when I was a teenager, for almost like for over 40 years. And somehow we've gone backwards. It went from being very diverse and everybody welcoming to sport is just for the elite or people that can afford it. And I would like it to go back to a sport for all type of atmosphere, type of community. I would like to see, again, people working together, stronger together, where it's like what we saw this past weekend at the Diversity in Sports Conference. It's like, oh, you're from Nova Scotia? I'm from Nova Scotia. This is where I'm from. People coming together, working together, collaborating together. So it's, we're all just equal. Like, we don't have to look at things and say, like, feel like a checkbox, because that's what I get all the time is people feel like a tick box. Where are you really hiring me because I'm qualified, I have the skills, I can bring something to your team? Or are you hiring me because, oh, look, the government said you have to have diversity on your team and I'm just going to do a little checkbox and I'm going to come into your organization and you're just going to ignore me? That's how people feel right now. So for me, in a perfect world, we're all working together. People are enjoying our sports, enjoying our culture, and we just continue to thrive as a community, as one, not as silos, but all together.
Well, let's meet you there in that version of Sportopia. You know, this segment came out of our deep desire to make example of exemplars. And we see you as one of those exemplars, Shauna, from your vision for a better space and a better place through sport, but intentionally designed so that we can forge these cultures of belonging. And, you know, when we look at the word belonging and we take it apart, it's this longing to be, right? This longing to be with others, this longing to be seen, this longing to be accepted, respected. And if I don't get that basic fundamental need met, I'm going to look elsewhere. So, you know, from us at Sport Law, we join you in this reclamation for the possibility that sport can be a place where everybody feels like they belong, everybody is welcomed. And I feel like it's happening. You know, Steve and I have been on this Hope tour since last April, and we're coming to the end of it now. And we feel that hope is here. It's no longer on the horizon. And in part, it's because we're so inspired by people like you who believe in a better way. And, you know, maybe I'll end with, in order to be us, they have to see us, right? So when I think of, you know, people of color and our Indigenous people, people who are differently abled, right? In order for more people like them to aspire to be champions and leaders and coaches and officials, they have to see these people. One of the big invitations that we make to everyone is the leadership ought to reflect the people that they're here to serve. So if there is 50% of the population that is female, then 50% of the directors ought to be female. If there's people of color, then your directors and leaders and administrators ought to reflect the people that are you're here in service of. So thank you so much, you know, Shauna, for your beautiful heart and your vision. We join you in that. We just absolutely stand united as allies and look forward to your conference next May. For those who are looking for tickets, it will be in the show notes. We'll do a link to Shauna's beautiful organization. So we thank you for joining us. In the episode notes below, you'll find some Sport Law blogs where you can find more information related to our conversation today, these examples of exemplars. Thank you so much for our listeners. We are so grateful to share our vision of Sportopia with you as we all look to elevate sport together.
As always, to have your say in Sportopia, email us at hello@sportlaw.ca or on social media at sportlawca to let us know what you want to hear about next. We're taking a bit of a hiatus over the summer, and we'll be highlighting some of our most popular episodes. We look forward to joining you in the fall for some newly minted episodes.
Until then, stay well.